Hi, Peter Williams here. Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email or hit the join email button on your RCR app. With your help, we can continue to stand up for free speech, for open debate and rational discussion, reaching new audiences and bringing important information free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Visit realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference.
Time for another Health Hacks this Monday morning here at RCR. And joining me from reversalnz.co.nz, Dr. Glenn Davies. Glenn, good to see you again.
Oh, fantastic to see you, Paul. Thank you for having me again.
Have you had your cold water immersion session already this morning, or is that yet to come?
Oh, Paul, I'm so embarrassed you've caught me out. I didn't do it this morning, but I certainly will. I certainly will. Got swamped preparing for this talk.
Okay, fair enough. Well, you can swamp yourself later in cold water. Okay, so we're here to talk about ultra-processed food, UPF. Okay, it's got an acronym. We know what it stands for. Exactly what are we talking about?
Yeah, so let's start by defining ultra-processed food. So this is sort of a summary definition. So ultra-processed food is wrapped in plastic with at least one ingredient that you wouldn't find in your kitchen. So anything that comes wrapped in plastic, and it's got a whole lot of chemicals in it, basically. I think that's what ultra-processed food is. So we're talking about your Tim Tams, your chocolate bars. We're talking about pizzas. We're talking about takeaways. We're talking about canola oil. Basically, you know how we've talked before, Paul, about healthy food has recently been growing, swimming, walking or flying?
Yep, absolutely.
It's unprocessed, it's natural. You could find it in your garden. You'd find it on the outside of the supermarket. You know, so you're going to find, your vegetables, your fruits, your meat, your chicken. And then I say, just don't delve into those dangerous aisles in the inside. You're allowed to go there to get your toilet paper and maybe your toothpaste, but, just stay away from those danger aisles. That's the difference, what we're talking about. Like if you were to think of it in pictorial terms, you've got a picture of some meat, fish, chicken on the good side. And then on the other side, you've got all your chippies and your lollies and your soft drinks and your pizza and your processed meat. It just goes on.
Yeah. Okay. So in terms of where you go in the supermarket and wrapped in plastic, well, there's a lot wrapped in plastic now that probably, but I know what you mean about that. I'm just wondering though, because we've talked around this area before and I'm always banging on about why does it continue? And I think you've got a sobering stat here, sort of using smoking as an example. So what is that?
Okay, so this comes from a 2019 article in The Lancet where they looked at health risks in 195 countries. And the summary statement is that poor diet has overtaken tobacco as the leading cause of early death globally.
Okay.
Now, I really want to emphasize this because that is really saying that poor diet is the number one cause of early death in the entire world.
Yeah.
And we have got so tough on the tobacco companies. We wouldn't imagine a tobacco company sponsoring a sporting event or advertising to children. Why is that actually encouraged when it comes to poor diet? And by poor diet, we're talking about ultra-processed food. Why is ultra-processed food allowed to sponsor sporting events? Why is it allowed to advertise directly to children? Why don't we have the skull and crossbones and the health warnings on the outside of cereal packets. You know, and I think there's a major, major talking point here that I think that the ultra-processed food companies need to be managed in the same way as the tobacco companies have been.
Well, it's interesting you say that because just very recently a politician got into trouble for policy on tobacco, and there was a leaked paper from the health ministry outlining some of the talk, not the policy, but the talk around that. And everyone fell off their chair and the media went crazy. Of course, they sense a bit of blood in the water, so they're there. So they're really, you know, like piranhas on that one. And it was, you know, accusing this particular politician of, you know, genociding the health of future generations, all that sort of high and mighty talk. But then there's this and not a peep. Nothing. In fact, big, like you say, big advertising for this, that, and the other thing in this zone of ultra processed food, nothing said. I mean, we're doing it to ourselves, it seems to me, Glenn, really badly.
Yeah. And the fact that nothing is said, in fact, it's probably even encouraged, you know, like this is the biggest health concern that we face globally. And there is not a peep. We still have lobbyists walking for the food industry, walking around in Parliament, directly impacting politicians. That wouldn't happen with tobacco, yet tobacco is number two. It's not number one anymore. Yeah. You know, ultra-processed food is the biggest enemy. And I just saw a really interesting statement that came out of South America, you know, because, you know, the statement, correlation is not causation. Meaning just because there's a correlation between two things, it doesn't mean it causes it. Yep. But this is a really interesting piece of a statement that comes out of South America. So most of the research on ultra-processed food comes out of South and Central America.
Okay.
And yep. I'll just read this quote. Metabolic diseases such as type 2 diabetes have gone from virtually unheard of in South and Central America to becoming the dominant public health concern in little over a decade. So I think the big statement here is little over a decade.
Not very long. That's really great. No.
So we've seen the dominant food source going from what you grew and caught and gardened to stuff that you buy in packets, and it's happening in less than a decade. So that it's not, I know it's not definite causation, but it's
Oh, come on. Yes, it is. We can say.
Okay. Yes, it is. You know,
I mean, it's a bit of a dance otherwise, isn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, and we've had 70 to 100 years of experimentation with ultra-processed food in the Western world. But when you see it happening in less than a decade in Central and South America, it is the cause. You know, we don't have to have a whole lot of more randomized controlled trials to prove it. Now we're moving into the phase of we've got to do something about the biggest cause of early death in the world.
Well, my observation here in New Zealand, and, you know, it just might be me, but it seems to me that folk who come and become New Zealanders kind of transform themselves. On arrival, they're kind of about right in terms of body mass, let's say. And this is probably the same for most Western countries.
Yes.
Here are three or four or five years, and now you're starting to look like, you know, the...
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So again, that's obvious because their diets are going to change and the culture is going to impose that on them. And it's pretty obvious, the connection, I think, anyway.
I think those studies were originally looked at in people who immigrated from Hawaii to the United States. And we also saw it with Japanese people moving to the United States. And as you say, within a very short period of time with adoption of the diet of that country, you saw the dramatic changes in body weight and the onset of these Western diseases.
And that's what I saw when I was in the States recently, just observing, driving through downtown and suburban LA four or five times in a row, is that everyone's fat.
Yes.
Okay, it's not just this like Latinos or African Americans. Everyone is overweight.
Yeah, and the stats are it's so close to half of American adults have pre-diabetes or diabetes. It's something like 49.7%. And when you look at type 2 diabetes and pre-diabetes, under that, there's the rest of the iceberg. You know, so 80% of American adults have poor metabolic health caused by ultra-processed food. So, and I just wanted to go on, and I don't think we can trust many of these producers of ultra-processed food, because what I've got up on my screen is is the warning label. No, sorry, the nutrition label for Diet Coke.
Well, that's an
And
oxymoron, isn't it?
there's, yeah, this is a UK one, and it's got a green light system, you know, system. So
Oh,
this
traffic light
product,
system. Oh,
the
God.
traffic light system, it gets 4 out of 5 stars. It's a health food because it contains no fat, no saturated fat, no sugar, and no salt. But if you look at the ingredient list, apart from the carbonated water, it is made up of caramel E150D. You wouldn't have that in your pantry. The
No.
sweeteners, aspartame, and what is that? Acesulfame K. You know, those are the sweeteners, and I certainly know the aspartame has been linked to causing renal cancer in rats.
Oh, dear.
And then natural flavorings, including caffeine, phosphoric acid, and citric acid. Phosphoric acid and citric acid, they take the enamel off your teeth. You know, so how does that get 4 out of 5 stars? There is some definite manipulation of a whole lot of systems that are going on for that to occur.
That just makes a mockery of everything, doesn't
Yeah.
it? Turning Diet Coke into a health food. Oh, crikey. What next?
I think it's so simple. You just got to go back to that rule. Has it recently been growing, flying, walking, or swimming? You know, if
Yeah,
it
but
meets that
that should be
criteria.
police, though. Sorry to jump in, Glenn. You can't let BS like that out there in the public domain.
No.
It's totally misleading.
This is deliberately misleading, false misinformation. You know, it's at the highest level manipulating a system to mislead the population into purchasing things which are bad for them. This is highest level misinformation.
And with the diet in front of that particular brand, Diet Coke, with the four green lights, the traffic light system, I could see how someone could convince themselves that they're not really doing any harm to themselves here. But yeah.
So I wanted to, this is a study, and I can't quote where it came from. It's more of a discussion, but it really talks to how dangerous and addictive these ultra-processed foods are. So in one arm of the study, what they did is they took two groups of people and they matched the food for the content of salt, sugar, protein, and fiber. One came from natural sources. So, for example, it might have been some fruit and some yogurt and, you know, a banana, for example. The other was highly processed, ultra-processed food, but it was matched for calories. And the one group that was on the ultra-processed food, over 2 weeks, they gained 1 kilogram because they had unlimited. Oh, sorry. The other point is they had unlimited access to food. They could have up to 5,000 calories per day.
Okay,
On
yep.
the ultra processed food, they ate 500 calories more per day, and over 2 weeks they gained 1 kilogram. There was no difference in the way the food was made up in terms of its macros. It was the fact that it was ultra processed and addictive, and it caused people to eat more. You know, that's the whole point. These foods are designed to make you eat more. They are feeding into your food addiction. It's making it difficult to stop eating them. You know, so there's science that goes into reaching the bliss point, making these foods as addictive as possible. You know, so this is where I don't know if the word evil is the
No,
right word,
I think you can use that word,
but
actually.
you know, to create something which is deliberately addictive, to make people eat more of it and purchase more of it to increase your profits. Doesn't that sound like something that the tobacco industry has been doing for a long period of time?
Totally.
Why are we allowing the food industry to do exactly the same thing? We haven't learned from the tobacco industry. And I think there's some evil behind this. There's certainly a profit-driven, not health-driven outcome here.
And exactly, you know, the tobacco equivalence is definitely there. I go past two McDonald's on my way around town. I don't want to single them out, but they're just, you know, I see them. And there are long queues around late afternoon. Usually it's when I'm out and about. People are obviously getting their after work food or their dinner or something. Thing is, the prices of that product has gone up a lot since the days when it was a good deal. Okay, just saying. So it's not price that's stopping people at all. They'll spend more. It's because they're addicted, is what I think when I drive past.
Yeah.
And it's right in front of your face. You can see it.
Well, you're right. This concept of addiction is really real. And again, it's something that isn't talked about at all. But if I'm recalling the statistic correctly, 55% of people with type 2 diabetes meet the criteria for food addiction. You know, so we know that ultra-processed foods are addictive. We know this correlation between food addiction and type 2 diabetes. You know, it's not a big step to say that the ultra-processed food is causing the type 2 diabetes. And why are we allowing this form of marketing to carry on? And the one that's most evil is the deliberate marketing to children.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
on the cereal box, you see brightly coloured, sugar-laden, circles. You know, donut shaped things on the box, deliberately using bright colors, deliberately marketing to children. You know, and one statistic, 80% of a teenager's diet in the Western world is made up of ultra processed food, which causes metabolic illness. Now, why instead of brightly colored, you know, sort of round pictures with a cuddly animal on the packet, why don't we have a skull and crossbones on that cereal packet? You know, because if it's laden with sugar, artificial flavorings, preservatives, why is it allowed to be marketed to children? It should have the skull and crossbones and a warning, you know, like on the outside of a cigarette packet.
So 80% of what young people, let's say, well, up to teens or late teens, 80% of what they're eating is ultra processed. 80%.
80%. So 20% of it only has recently been growing in the garden or walking, swimming or flying.
That's a train wreck potentially, isn't it?
And if you think it's about potentially around 10 years where from when you start your ultra processed food diet to when you develop pre-diabetes, you know, it's not surprising that by the year 2040, New Zealand is expected to spend $3.5 billion just on diabetes.
Gee.
You know, we're and it's not just diabetes, it's causing obesity, hypertension, poor mental health, cancer, Alzheimer's, all of these modern diseases that you don't see in traditional societies that are eating traditional foods. We see these diseases in the Western world where we're eating ultra-processed foods. You know, it's a simple correlation to me. Is it a simple fix? You know, the cause is simple. Is it a simple fix? No, it's a really complex, complicated fix.
Well, how complicated is it then?
Okay. It's complicated because you have a massive industry that is trying to promote its product for profit. It's going to be very, very difficult to fix this. But, you know, I'm getting a bit overexcited on this topic.
Settle down.
What might we do to address this? So I think we need to manage the producers of ultra-processed food in the same way as we've managed the tobacco industry. So I think we could put warnings on the packets. I think that would be simple. I think we could even put the skull and crossbones on the outside.
What about hideous pictures of, you know, necrotizing fat or something?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. One thing is we could use real food and institutions. You know, when you go into hospital and you've got no choice but to eat the hospital food, it shouldn't be ultra processed food. It should be real, fresh, unprocessed food in institutions and in hospitals.
Or what about this one? If you can have a medical each year and you can show that you're not in this pre-diabetic state, you're not exceedingly obese, all these things, check box ticked off, did you actually get a tax break?
What a great idea. You're introducing the topic of involving the insurance companies, and that's a fantastic idea too, because the insurance companies are motivated to have well people. So that's a really simple one to involve the insurance companies, just like you've said, in a reduction in your premiums.
Or even the state pays for it. Don't think I'm crazy. If you're saving per person on healthcare into the thousands every year, then it makes sense
It does.
to fund that because that'd only be in the hundreds, probably, with your risk profile.
Yeah, do that. Or go a little step further. This might be a little bit harder, but why don't we tax these products in the same way as we tax alcohol and tobacco? Why
Because
not?
the addiction will not be broken. That's that example I told you about Macca's. You can put the burger up another $2 or $3, another $4 or $5. They'll still go and buy them.
No, not. Actually, perhaps not true, because when we've looked at tobacco, the only public health initiative which seems to have made a difference, well, hang on, I might be exaggerating to say only, but the most effective one is price. So you are right, but as the price goes up, more and more people stop smoking. So that taxation issue does actually work, and we're
Yeah, just
seeing
go
it
to
work.
vaping though, Glenn. So, and I know a
Yeah.
bit about vaping. $20, you've got four, depending on how much you do it, 5 days worth of stuff to suck on. Now, you don't, that's half a packet of fags, and you might go through that in a day.
Yeah, however, you're a really good analogy, because stopping smoking cigarettes and moving to vaping, let's apply that. Stop ultra processed food. What's your option? Move to whole food. You know, the option that you're moving to in this scenario is actually a really healthy option. I think the problem of moving from tobacco to vaping is a problem, but moving from ultra processed food to whole food, now that's a solution, eh? So
Yeah, totally,
that
yeah.
might work.
And relentless messaging, because we know that works. Relentless messaging. If you persuade the kids, because I remember when I used to smoke a bit. And had young kids. I gave up at around that time, but 3 or 4, they're already onto you. You know, you shouldn't be doing that.
And I can give you a fantastic example of this. So, one of the Kura introduced this policy where, if someone, say, one of the kids bought a packet of Twisties, for example, in their lunchbox, they would just take out the Twisties, replace it with an apple, and give the Twisties back to the child to take home. And one of the nans said to me, she said, "I was so embarrassed when my mokopuna bought in back home the packet of Twisties and said,
Oh, you'd send a
Nan,
message. Yeah.
Nan, this is not kapai kai." And she
Yeah,
said she never put the Twisties or the packet in the lunchbox again. So that's just a little anecdote of how effective it is persuading the children and letting the children influence the parents and the grandparents.
any other levers that could be pulled? You've talked about, the tobacco related ones that we're aware of. Anything else? I mean, there's lobbying. You could drop kick the lobbyists out easy.
Oh, there should not be lobbyists for any of these industries in Parliament. I'm not sure how much that happens in New Zealand. I think in the United States, it's a really big problem, isn't it?
Or to the bureaucrats.
I don't know. Oh, there's also an environmental angle that you could go from as well, because it's the ultra food processed food industry which is directly impacting on the South American rainforests. So the rainforests have been cut down to plant soy and corn and palm oil. You can hit it from an environmental angle as well. And I saw this quote: "The biggest risk facing the ultra food, processed food industry is the ultra processed food industry, because in cutting down the rainforest, they're dramatically reducing rainfall in this area, and they need rainfall to grow their crops. So, you know, in some ways, they're destroying themselves."
Yeah.
So perhaps the environmental angle, that's one which I think
Well,
definitely
we could be
does.
helping that. We've just given $100 million in the last few years to Ukraine, to the meat grinder that's killing a whole lot of young people. Be better spent stopping people from turning their lovely rainforest into, well, eventually barren wastelands. But that's not our priority, you see.
Now, and another one is, as the consumer, you probably have the greatest ability to influence this process by not buying it. You know, these companies are influenced by sales and bottom line, you know, follow the money. If we just stop buying it, then they're going to have to produce alternatives that hopefully would be more healthy. So let's just walk the talk or make the impact as consumers, and don't buy the ultra processed food.
Yeah, a lot of lazy thinking around though, Glenn.
And also, I think if you were to really look at the issue, it's the combination of poverty and ultra processed food that really is the problem, because these ultra processed foods are the cheapest foods. You know, there is no denying that a loaf of white bread and some 2-minute noodles is dramatically less expensive than buying some fresh chicken and some broccoli and tomatoes. So, you know, so it's the combination of poverty and ultra processed food that we need to look at. And, you know, poverty, that's really something that government has to address and deal with. But the ultra processed food, you know, as individuals, we can choose not to buy it. And this cost issue, you know, can we grow our own gardens? Can we have community gardens? Can we have some chickens at home? You know, all of these kind of options of growing our own healthy food to at least reduce the consumption of the ultra processed food. The community gardens is a wonderful solution.
Someone has to make an effort, though. And there are a few things there. People are working a lot of hours to keep the money in. So, how much time do they have? Others are on the couch because that's the only way they know. And even if they've, you know, been out for a day working, you want to sort of blob down and there are, you know, video games and things like that. It's a question of how you motivate people to be more disciplined in their life. It's a tough one.
I think just getting this messaging out. So step number one is we have to identify that ultra processed food is a health crisis, a public health crisis, and it is the cause of all of these modern conditions. I don't think that information is widely known.
No.
So step number one would it be to at least get that information out there. You know, going back to that first point we made collectively, Paul, that you know, that ultra processed food has taken over from tobacco smoking as the leading cause of early death globally. No, let's just get that message out there to begin with. At least help people to understand how deadly things like white bread, 2-minute noodles, Tim Tams, Morro bars,
Yep.
takeaways, just how deadly they are. At least let's start by getting that out there. That would be step number one, I think.
And you mentioned, and I think this would go a long way, because that changed the game too, for tobacco. And you remember all the motor racing and all the rugby league, they're all sponsored by, you know, Winfield and Benson and Hedges and all of that.
Yes.
And they were kicking and screaming when that came to an end.
Yes.
There was a transition. The people who ran those events found other sponsors. They didn't go away, and that removed it from being in the face of the average person who spent a lot of time watching the sport, etc. That could happen tomorrow with with, as you say, the, well, there's the cricket, there's the rugby, there's all sorts of things. You could pound that message and get to a lot of people. And because it is associated with their favourite sport, they'll give it credibility. That's the way to start in terms of public messaging, I think.
Yeah, well, Paul, you've made a fantastic point, because with the loss of tobacco industry sponsorship of sporting events, who has taken up the mantle? If we're watching the cricket, it's no longer the Benson and Hedges cricket. It's sponsored by KFC. And I'm not wanting to point the finger at KFC. It is an example of ultra-processed food using, you know, cheap oils. You know, like, it's now the KFC that's sponsoring the cricket. So,
well, the cricket don't have to do the deal. They might have to have a principle and say, okay, we can forego a percentage of revenue in this opportunity because we need to do the right thing.
Exactly. I think you've hit the nail on the head. Yeah.
Okay. Any other points that we need to cover here before we're done talking about this, which is the biggest problem? It's our biggest problem, isn't it? Because not only is it physical, it extends, as you said before, into mental health, how people see themselves, how people value their lives, the meaning of everything. It's just so many angles to this.
Yeah. So, you know, I think we've made the point. I think the next step is for that awareness of ultra-processed food as the leading cause of early death globally to expand out, like the dropping the pebble in the middle of the pond, the ripple effect.
Getting the ripple.
People to start talking about this, and for it to directly influence their decisions in the supermarket, it then to spread out to, you know, we've talked about the companies which run these sporting events, and eventually to government and public health. So I think it begins with just each individual thinking and about their individual dietary choices.
I think there has been a subtle change. I think, and it's probably limited to people who are question things more than others, but there has been a change. I think people are questioning the motivation of industry now. They are seeing, you know, these, like you've just pointed out, you know, that ultra-processed foods have taken over from tobacco, and they remember, we all remember, the, you know, the war on tobacco. So I think that people are waking up, but it's the vast majority that need to experience that, right? But I think it is starting.
I think Paul, I think our listeners, you know, at Reality Check Radio are the people that are asking these questions.
Yep.
And, you know, I'd encourage our listeners to just start having these conversations with people, and not in an accusing way. Like, I'm not suggesting that people go into supermarkets and start removing things from people's trolleys, which actually has happened to me. That literally has happened. Somebody took stuff out of my trolley and said, you can't bang on about all that stuff and then eat that. And thanks for having me. My thought was, it's not for me, I'm not going to eat it, but that wasn't true.
So, you know,
but not going that far.
Direct just action.
just having the conversations with, you know, our children, our mokopuna, our neighbours, you know, have the conversation. I think that's where it starts.
Yeah. All right. Okay. And if anyone has any questions, they can email in and we'll pass them on to Glenn, and we'll chat about some of those if they come through, maybe in another program of Health Hacks. Well, that was always interesting. And that one was interesting as well, Glenn. Thanks for coming back on.
RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it. And right now, they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.